Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. My name is John Manuel. I'm joined today by J.J. Cooper. We're actually not going to talk about college baseball today, a little pro baseball podcast for you here at BaseballAmerica.com. But we do want to remind you we're coming to you from the DeMarini Demo House podcast nook, because when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right and visit your nearest demo house today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. And we want to thank DeMarini for their continued sponsorship of Baseball America's podcast. And we're recording in the podcast nook with our original podcast equipment, which was researched for us by J.J. Cooper, but also by our IT guy, Greg the Machine Levine. And today is Greg's last day. And it was a great lunch, paid for by someone else. Good lunch with Greg, reminiscing a little bit, watching Jason Hayward go mano a mano with Justin Furlander on the flat screen behind us. A win-win lunch with one big loss, and that is Greg. And we're sorry to see Greg go. He's been responsible for a lot of the IT advances at Baseball America over the years. If we didn't give him so much to do, he would have redesigned the website a few times by now. But we'll miss Greg, and he's not someone who we talk about or ever comes on a podcast or any of those kind of things, but he's someone who's made significant contributions to Baseball America over the last 5 years. And we will miss him greatly. And
we wish him luck in everything going forward. And,
absolutely.
And luck for his Orioles. You know, a good Orioles season would do a lot for, you know.
That's right. Now, I would have chosen the Markakis poster as my going away present if I were an Orioles fan and being Greek. But he took Matt Wieters. Might be slightly end up better than being Markakis. We'll see about that. And my gag gift for him would have been a Brendan Haywood poster, because his least favorite former Wizards player. But we are here to talk a little bit about baseball and not basketball. And J.J. posted on our Facebook page earlier today that we're doing a podcast, and many of you have responded
mailbag
with questions. So it's going to be a mailbag podcast, although we could start off real briefly with Jason Hayward. It's obviously the news coming out today that the Braves, today we're recording this on Friday, the 26th, the day after Greek Independence Day, Zito Elada. But Jason Hayward officially on the Braves opening day roster, J.J., and it really would have taken wild horses to drag him away from Bobby Cox, is the way it seems. Maybe if John Schuerholz had been there and had the stature of 20 years as general manager, he might have been able to do this. But I don't see how Frank Wren could have possibly explained this to Bobby in Bobby Cox's last year, that no, you don't get the best hitter on your team to go north to Atlanta with you.
Especially because there is no argument that really seemed to be able to be made coming out of spring training except for the financial side of it.
Right.
Because
that was the only argument.
The problem is that you can't say, hey, but he needs to work on this aspect of his game that a couple of weeks in Gwinnett, you know, at AAA would help. He's probably the most selective hitter, you know, on the team. He sneezes at, you know, 0-2 sliders that are an inch off the plate.
It's amazing. His discipline this spring has been amazing.
He has a plan at the plate every at-bat. He puts in quality at-bat after quality at-bat after quality at-bat. That doesn't mean he's not going to struggle at some point this year.
Right.
But you watch him, and it's one of those things that you say, man, but he just has he does not look like a 20-year-old.
His strikeout in his first at-bat today against Justin Verlander was one of the most impressive strikeouts I've ever seen, because Justin Verlander reached back for something extra, had to go 98 miles an hour on a 3-2 spring training fastball, like the seventh or eighth pitch of the at-bat. And, you know, Hayward was late on it, but Hayward had already fouled off 97 earlier in the at-bat.
And it was 0-2.
Yeah,
and
he worked it to
3-2. Every good pitch he fouled off, every bad pitch he took, you know, and he worked it to 3-2, fouled off another pitch at 3-2, if I remember right.
I think you're right.
And then, okay, you know, so, I mean, it might have been like a 10-pitch at-bat.
It was a lengthy at-bat, and it was a very stark example of just what you're talking about. He did not give away that at-bat. He didn't just go up there flailing when he was down two strikes in the count. He had a plan. He executed his plan. He just got beat by a better pitch,
right.
And that better pitch was 98 with life.
And he's a professional hitter right now. And that's the thing that you very rarely can say about a guy coming out of the minors. You can say that they're a very, you know, that they have great power, great bat speed, but there are very few guys when they make the jump to the big leagues who already have that, hey, I'm not going to give you bad at bat.
Right.
Most guys do.
You really look at the Braves with him in the lineup. That's a high upside ball club if they stay healthy. They should be I would question their infield defense a little bit. Chipper Jones is 38. Yunel Escobar is a pretty good shortstop. I don't think
Troy
he's
Glass
great.
Learning a, you know,
Troy Glass has played 8 games ever at first base. So up the middle, they're pretty solid with Escobar and Martin Prado. And their outfield, you have Hayward and Nate McLouth. Gold Glover Nate McLouth, who the advanced defensive metrics don't like. And then Melky Cabrera / Matt Diaz. You know, which is a good. Those are both good,
right, and especially,
you know, extra guys. Matt Diaz had a great year last year.
Melky Cabrera being, in essence, in some ways, a fourth outfielder, is he's going to be one of, you know.
He's a championship-caliber fourth outfielder. Obviously, he was a center fielder on a championship team last year, although most of his tenure in the Yankees, they weren't as good as they've been. And to me, he was a below-average hitter.
But
still, he's a perfect fourth outfielder. He's a nice guy to have also as insurance for if Jason Hayward has any injury issues, as he's had in the minor leagues, if he misses any time, and Melky Cabrera, good defender, can play center.
I don't think at this point Matt Dyes has shown that he can hit, but if Matt Dyes turns back into a pumpkin or something, you also have Matt, you know.
That's true, too.
Melky Cabrera there.
And then, you know, to me, the big question for the Braves is, again, the injuries also matter on the mound for them. You have Tim Hudson coming off Tommy John surgery, although he's looked good this spring, and Billy Wagner is their closer. How long does he hold up? So we'll see, but the upside of that team, I think, is as good as the Phillies' upside is. I mean, the Braves have significant upside, but whether they get to that or not, I think, depends mostly on health.
So let's go to the mailbag. I'm going to start it off. I'll pick the first question, because I think this question is a good one to throw out to John, because Josh Burnett asks, Madison Bumgarner's velocity has still been down in the high 80s in spring training, so it appears that despite Giants fans' hope, the decline wasn't just a fatigue issue. Does this affect your opinion of him as a prospect, and what are the chances that he's just another Jesse Fopper?
Josh, I think you worded it exactly right. As far as that question goes, it does seem that there might be a chance that he's another Jesse Fopper. The things I've read about Bumgarner this spring, the best explanation I've read, and I haven't called a scout about him this spring like I did last year, and, you know, his delivery has always been an asset for him. It seems like his delivery is what's working against him right now as far as his velocity. And not so much the crossfire, it's the fact that he doesn't incorporate his lower half into his delivery is enough. So all the burden of all his velocity is coming from his arm and his shoulder, and maybe he's lost a tick of arm speed, which is what I had in the scouting report last year from high school. And I think it looks like that might be happening again this spring from the little bit that I've seen. I did see a little spring training video of him. But it sounds like there's that kind of crossfire delivery thrown a little bit across his body that he does, and the deception that gives him, and also putting a lot of strain on his shoulders. I don't think he's hurt. I think he does have maybe a little bit of shoulder, whether it's a shoulder fatigue or whether it's just not as much strength in his shoulder as he used to have. I think, first of all, he had the classic giant spin, just like they did with Jesse Fopper, saying, oh, he never threw that hard. That's bunk. He did throw that hard.
And Jesse Fopper did, too.
And Jesse Fopper absolutely did, too. But I think that there is a concern, so I do think it can be fixed. But I think where he keeps the same arm slot, but he has to learn to incorporate his lower half in his delivery, and that's not easily done.
That's not easy done with the muscle memory after that long.
Well, I think it's a lot easier to do with your legs.
Yeah.
I mean, we just actually were watching that Braves-Tigers game. Derek Lowe is 36, and he just changed his delivery.
Right. It can be done.
And he changed his delivery pretty radically. He's dropping his back knee and tilting his shoulders a little bit to get more over the top and drive downhill as opposed to just relying on natural sink. So it can be done, and I'd much rather have to incorporate your lower half more in your delivery than revamp your arm action and all that.
It's a significant concern,
and it does. I mean, we did our position by position rankings in the last issue of Baseball America, and we dropped Madison Bumgarner a couple spots, even from where we had him in our top 100. All that said, the biggest issue for me with Madison Bumgarner having to change something is he's never failed. I mean, his spring training stats weren't that good, but neither are Tim Lincecum's.
Right.
It's his stuff that you're more concerned with, but he had that kind of stuff in Double A last year as a 19/20-year-old, and didn't just succeed, he was outstanding.
And brought it to the big leagues. And
that's right. So I still am very bullish on Madison Bumgarner, because I do think that the changes and the adjustments that he can make are ones that can be made. Whether the Giants will make them or not is another question, because they might say these results are still the results that we're looking for, and he's still getting guys out, so why change? I mean, the guy over the last 2 years has performed better than any pitcher in the minor leagues. It's not close.
There's not a second guy to go, put so-and-so in that comparison. No, there's no one.
You can't. And he's 20 years old. He'll be 21 in, August. So He's athletic. He's left-handed. I do think it's all there. But there's significant reason to have concern. I'm not as concerned about the arm action as I am about the lack of use of the lower half. So that's a good question, and I do think people have to be concerned. But keep in mind that he's 20 years old and hasn't ever pitched in AAA, I don't believe. He went from AA to the big league. So
right.
I think there's a lot of but it is I think it's a significant issue, and I think he loses a little shine as a prospect. There's no doubt about it from what happened this spring. All right, JJ, now I get to task you with one of these questions. And honestly, I hadn't looked at them enough to – well, there's an easy one. Thomas Shells. So these are all people who are fans on our Facebook page.
Yeah,
so if you want to contribute in the future, we have about 4,500 fans on our Facebook page right now. Actually, I guess it was 4,486 since I actually printed out a page from Facebook, which is a number one sign that you're old, is that I printed a page from Facebook. But Thomas Shields, I think it is actually – asked, first, thanks us very much for this, and also wondering two things, maybe you could address either one. Danny Duffy, the Royals prospect, walking away from baseball, and any updates as the why, and also John Lamb and his potential as a pitcher. Thanks very much. And JJ, you blanket the Royals for us, and you were all over the Danny Duffy stuff for us just this week.
So talk to JJ Piccolo. He's the farm director, scouting director, assistant GM for scouting. And
I always love it when you call him. It's like, hey, JJ, this is JJ.
Hey, JJ. Hey, good to talk to you, JJ. Thanks for calling me, JJ. I gotta like that there's actually another JJ out there. There are not that many JJ.
He might be the most powerful JJ in baseball,
I think besides you.
Yeah, I think you're number
JJ
two.
JJ Davis never reached his
And you control independent baseball, so.
No, I do not. But
you're the most influential person in independent baseball this side of Miles Wolf. I'll say that.
But talking to him, one of the things that he really stressed was that he made a good point. He said when they put out a release, they originally were going to put out that for personal reasons. He was leaving for personal reasons. And then they changed that to, you know, I think how they were, something along the lines of life priorities. And they did that because they wanted to stress. They didn't want people to see this and think, oh, there's something wrong with Danny Duffy,
right,
and so he's leaving.
It's not like there's some mental imbalance.
Right, there's not mental, nothing.
Or like Zach Greinke dealt with, where he dealt with significant mental health issues.
This is not a social anxiety disorder. This is not, you hear a lot of times of players are getting away from the game and then you find out later, oh, he went to rehab or something
right,
like that. This isn't any of that. The best way that I had it explained to me, and also Bob Dutton talked to one of his good friends, a trainer, who worked for him in Wilmington. It really seems like what we're talking about here is a guy who started thinking about in the offseason, you know, is this what I want to do? And I know that a lot of people hearing this are probably going to go, really? Someone has
right,
a chance to play pro baseball, not only play it, but has excelled at every level he's gone and really was, in a best-case scenario, 4 months, 5 months away from getting his first taste of the big leagues.
He's been exposed to some pretty good things in professional baseball. I mean, he's been promoted.
He's a futures gamer.
He was a futures gamer. He got a pretty good signing bonus. He was a third-round
pick.
He's
never had an ERA above 3 in his entire pro career.
Right.
He's been successful everywhere he's gone. And I know a lot of people are going to hear that and go, how can you let that, you know, turn away from that? And the thing about it is that, you know, obviously I've never been, you know, a guy who's played minor league baseball and gone through that grind.
Right.
But I have covered it. You know, I covered a team kind of going through that grind for about a 5-year span, the Macon Braves and low A team. And the thing that just jumps out is that if you don't have a certain personality, the on the field part of it can actually be the easiest part of it.
Right.
You know, when you say, hey, I decided I wanted to do something different, which at least for now that's what Danny Duffy's doing, it may not even be I don't like baseball. Because the on the field part of it is a little part of it, but if as a baseball player, it is your life for, you know, the 6 months of the year, and that life involves, especially at the minor league level, you are always as a team, basically you are a family,
right? Whether you like it or not,
you're always going to be sharing a room with someone else, and in many cases, I mean, by the end of the road trip, you know, by the end, last day of a, you know, homestand or a road, wherever your last day at a site is, you're 10 guys in a room.
That's right.
Because at 9 a.m. they take away, you know, all the rooms except for, say, 2 or 3.
Right.
And, okay, well, you know, report to the ballpark at 3. Until then, it's, you know, you're
killing time with nine of your closest friends that you sort of have to be
right.
Friends
not
and
your
family
best
with.
Closest friends, or you know, nine guys that you just are kind of stuck with.
Right.
And the description that Bob Dutton got from the trainer was is that he's kind of an introverted guy, and if you don't kind of enjoy that, every moment, what's the next prank going to be?
Right.
Kind of that. If you don't enjoy that environment,
the things that other people do to break up the monotony
right.
of that grind and to take their minds off what a grind it is,
and how you're basically spending half of your day every day. The best way to put it is wasting time.
Yeah.
If you're on the road, you are just wasting time.
You're killing time until you get to the ballpark,
right? Because you don't have a car. You can basically walk to whatever you want in your walking radius. But
right.
besides that, all you're doing is going, okay, we need to be the ballpark at what time?
Really, the best case scenario for that is in today's game is, boy, I hope that your minor league player loves video games. I actually almost worry about Virginia Tech's Jesse Hahn. He told me the other day when I did a feature on him that he hates video games. That's one of the reasons why as a kid he always went outside and played catch with his dad, which helped build up his arm strength as a kid. But in pro ball, he better get used to either video games or watching movies or
going
something.
To the mall.
You got to be good at. You got to be figure out a way to sit around and not go crazy.
Right, and the thing about it is that for some guys,
we sports writers are good at that.
Yeah, we're but for some guys, that's tough. And the thing about it is that Danny Duffy's not an exception on this. There are a lot of
right.
other guys who hit that point. The difference is most of the guys you never hear about it because. Most of the guys hit that point at some point where they're, a utility infielder in high A and
right.
go,
this isn't worth
me. So those guys.
Or they weren't third-round picks.
Right.
They were never big. There wasn't a lot expected of them anyway.
Right. And a lot of times, they may hit that decision, but the decision is made for them before they ever do because they're told, hey, you're being released.
Yeah, it was definitely a shock to hear that about Danny Duffy. But he had an elbow injury this spring, and it didn't seem like it was too serious, but it's his first real physical setback. And you just almost wonder if he had a little inactivity and that reminded him of all the things he doesn't like about baseball.
Well, the one thing is apparently he was already thinking about this before he ever got hurt. So it wasn't something like that came up after
okay.
the injury. But I do think, and I'll say this, I think, I do the Reds also. Philippe Valiquette, who's still a prospect in their organization, he went home.
Right.
Now it was a little different situation. He was an 18-year-old
right.
who had never had success because he'd kind of been pitched at levels above his ability.
Right.
And he kind of didn't really fit in, didn't feel like he fit in, and so he went home for like a funeral or something and decided, hey, I'm not going back. Now, then he got 6 months away from the game, thought about it a little bit more, and said, hey, I'm ready to come back.
Well, former Twins prospect David Winfrey had the same
right.
commitment to the game issue, basically, where he walked away from the Twins.
So I don't.
And Jose Maharas had it many times with the Twins.
So
slightly different.
But so I don't think this necessarily means that we've seen the last pitch that Danny Duffy will ever throw. I think there's a pretty good chance that at some point he may decide to give it another try. But that hopefully gives some explanation of at least to the best that we understand. Now
right.
we've called Danny, his voicemail's full,
right.
texted Danny, if he wants to talk about it, we're, happily would give his side of, what happened, but that's the best that we understand it. On the second part of the question,
John Lamb is the good news. So we had the bad news first for Royals fans, but now here's the good news.
Again, when I was talking to J.J. Piccolo, I asked him, okay, so who's really stood out for y'all in spring training? And the first name that comes up is John Lamb. He said John Lamb has just been lights out here, which isn't that much of a surprise
right.
because they have a lot of pitching prospects. As far as if you said pick out one guy who just knows how to pitch, which a lot of times almost is faint praise.
Right, right, right.
But John Lamb knows how to pitch, even though, we're talking about a guy who's yet to really, this will be his first full season.
Right.
But he knows how to pitch, and he's got good enough stuff to go with it.
Now he's a year and a half removed,
yeah.
almost 2 years removed from the injury that hampered him as a high school senior.
Right.
So
I think he could be a breakout guy this year.
I think that he thought that going into the year.
Yeah.
But now he's definitely he's had a good showing early on in spring training. So Thomas, that's about as thorough an answer as you're going to get on any podcast about the Royals situation in spring training. So thanks for the question.
Okay, and I'll kick it back to you with Michael Richards. Could you talk about Peter Borjos and where you see him playing for the Angels and where you see him landing this year?
Isn't Michael Richards? We're glad that he's back out in public. Isn't
yeah,
that Kramer?
Yeah, I think that is Kramer. Yeah,
thank you very much, Michael. But Peter Borgios, you know, he's coming off, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a hand-slash-wrist-slash-thumb injury there late in the year last year. So I'm always interested to see how those guys come back from those kind of injuries.
I think with that you always have to see a little patience because
right.
guys come back much earlier than you actually see, you know, the strength come back.
Yeah, but he's actually a guy that I talked to a scout about this spring, not who had seen him yet, it was just when spring training was starting. We were talking about guys that we were interested in right when our top 100 came out, and this scout, we were going over our top 100, and this, you know, I just wondered out loud, do we err including Peter Borgios on the top 100? He was like, no, I think all the reports we have, and I've actually talked to two guys since then who have the same thought. Their organization have really strong reports on Peter Borgios. There's raw power in there, and he just has to, I think really being more selective is going to be the whole key for Peter Borgios. How much more selective is he going to be? I think there's a limit to how much more selective the guy can get, but I don't think he's going to be one of these guys who I forget whose stats it was that I looked up the other day, who had one walk and 33 strikeouts. I don't think that's going to be Peter Borgios. He's not that extreme. I do think the fact that he doesn't have patience and he's never going to be a high walks guy limits his ceiling pretty significantly because his speed is his defining characteristic. And it's not 1968 anymore. He's probably not going to be a leadoff guy.
It is funny. Like, it is something where if you're a power guy and you lack some of that selectivity, it's much less of a problem.
I think so.
Because if you're a speed guy, it almost becomes the difference between you batting 1-2 or batting 7-8.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Whereas if you're a power guy, it's the difference between you batting 3-4 and 5-6,
right.
Which isn't nearly as...
Not as big of a deal, I don't think. I think that's a big question for Peter Borgios. Now, he's in the right organization for that. The Angels are not going to hold him back. They love his aggressiveness. And the other thing that Peter Borgios has going for him is defense. So I'm pretty bullish on Peter Borgios. I actually like the Angels top of their top 10 pretty well. I like Hank Conger. I like Peter Borgios. I acknowledge those are flawed prospects, but I like those guys. I like Mike Trout. We have a question about Mike Trout. I like the top of the Angels farm system. My questions for them are there's not a lot of pitching depth there, especially the upper levels. They went through a lot of that last year with Sean O'Sullivan and Trevor Bell, and those guys weren't very good
and
in AAA or AA.
They really, I mean... Beyond, obviously, Nick Adenhart's death is
right.
much more than just on the field what it means. But it really did hurt them because they had developed a guy who, okay, he
no
was
doubt.
The guy who was supposed to fill that role. And
correct.
Then these other guys would have been behind him.
Correct.
And all of a sudden you had to speed some of those guys up a little faster than they probably were ready to, you know.
Beyond the senselessness and the tragedy of it, it's from a baseball standpoint, it was a pretty big blow for the Angels, just from strictly a baseball standpoint. I mean, not to mention every other way. So their farm system has taken some hits, and they have, you know, they had a lot of picks in last year's draft. They have a lot in this year's draft again coming up. But I think Peter Borgios is a legitimate top of a top 10 prospect. I think he's, you know, in a better organization, he'd be in that more in that 5-8 range because I do wonder about the offensive ceiling. It's a little bit of an unorthodox swing, a little bit of an unorthodox way of running even. But he's got big-time speed and big-time defense, so at the very least, this guy's going to have, I think, a career as an extra outfielder. I really think it all hinges on how much upside there is in the bat. But I'm fairly bullish on him, and not just because he's half Greek and half Polish. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and JJ. Podcast at baseballamerica.com is the email address. You can send questions for the next podcast. Aaron and I will podcast on Monday on college, as we do every week, so if you have questions about that, you can send those in. But going back to this week's mailbag, Drew Sarver, our leadoff question, he was first in the queue, and we might want to make sure we get to Drew's question. When does Justin Smoke reach the majors, JJ? And I saw a Rangers game on MLB Network last week, and Chris Davis parked one about 500 feet, so he's got some pretty good competition.
Which, by the way, this is, you know, we're not getting paid for this plug, but we've talked
MLB
about
Network.
MLB Network has been, it's heaven as a baseball fan for spring training.
No doubt about it.
We've gotten to watch so many more games this year, you know, parked in an office than you ever have had a chance to before.
It's just awesome.
It's wonderful.
I mean, that's a fundamental difference. And JJ's our office's biggest NFL fan. There's a fundamental difference between MLB Network and NFL Network. When MLB Network shows a game, that's a great thing. More exposure for this team. They're usually showing games that you wouldn't otherwise see. Especially spring training, they're picking up, or they're picking up other feeds. You know, they're picking
right.
up minor league game feeds.
Right.
It's like, oh, there's a minor league game on MLB Network today. Awesome. I'll set the TiVo. With NFL Network, when they have a game, it's like, the games on NFL Network.
No,
I don't have that.
It, yeah.
You know, it's a real pain. But yeah, obviously they're apples and oranges. But I haven't gotten to see Justin Smoak yet this spring.
He's been sent down to the to the minor league camp now.
So you won't see him in April.
The key thing, I think you just hit on it. I don't think it has anything to do right now with Justin Smoak. I think Justin Smoak's going to put up numbers and going to show pretty quickly that he's probably ready to help out. But the question becomes, Chris Davis, obviously, it fell apart for him last year.
Right.
2 years ago.
In a big way.
2 years ago, everything came together for him about as well as it could.
Yeah.
If we see 2008 Chris Davis, you know, all of a sudden it comes down to the question of, okay, well, Smoak may be ready here, but do we have a spot for him?
Right, and it's not like there's room at DH because Vladimir Guerrero did not pick up a glove this year.
Right, so with that being the case, if you see Chris Davis come off to a hot start and the Rangers are winning, it's going to delay Smoak's arrival, you know, or if Davis is off to a slow start. I mean, Chris Davis has to know.
Right.
I don't have a large margin of error here. You can't hit .190 in April and think, oh, you know, they're going to give me May and June to get this sorted out.
And there's no more Hank Blaylock in the way of either of those guys who had another sub-300 on-base percentage but did hit 20-plus home runs.
So
I can see why they played him some. There's not a lot of other options at first base. Maybe Max Ramirez is possibly an option there.
I mean, well, the thing about it is it's Davis. I mean, they clearly made it. When they try to trade Max Ramirez away in the offseason.
Right, and they still might.
And they're right. But, I mean, the thing with the Rangers is if they can be in it in June and July, there's not a team out there. If they have a hole that they need to fill, I mean, because they have surpluses at positions where you're like, okay, you know, hey, especially, say Chris Davis is having a solid year. That's even better news for them. They could hit June, and it's like, I know first basemen don't give you a whole lot of value.
But you could try to sell high on Chris Davis.
But you could sell high on Chris Davis, who's only 24. I mean, you're not talking about trading a 35-year-old or something. You could sell high on him and say, we can trade him away and not miss a beat. We actually may be better with Justin Smoak coming into the lineup. And, hey, we can fill this hole if we need, you know, they're probably not going to need a starting pitcher, but say they did. Or, hey, you know, we have a position that we're weak at.
Well, they've had a rough spring. They have the worst record in the American League in spring training, for whatever that's worth. The other issue, I guess, for Texas, I think Texas always needs pitching.
Yeah.
And no matter what, they always seem to need pitching and pitching depth with the heat down there. But obviously they had the biggest distraction of any team in spring training this year with the Ron Washington thing. I don't think you and I have even talked about that. We've talked about Harry Truman a lot lately, but not Ron Washington. What was your thought on the Ron Washington deal?
It's one of those things that I think for managers, the worst thing that can happen as a manager is don't be a distraction.
Right.
I mean, you know, I hate to say that, but it really is the case that not that managers don't have an important job, but we have seen that, you know, you don't say, okay, we're going to remake the roster over a year and see that work. But we have seen many teams, you know, we've seen the Rockies a couple of times now where, hey, this isn't working, we're going to change managers, and all of a sudden, you know, it seems like all that worked.
Right.
As a manager, the worst thing you want to avoid is, you know, just don't be a distraction because, you know, the story should not be about you very often.
Yeah.
And obviously this isn't something where, you know, Ron Washington wanted to be a distraction. And, I mean, they're talking that there even was a possible blackmail situation if he hadn't, you know, come out with it
at
all.
Right,
I mean, which is kind of crazy.
It is crazy.
But
More than the
mistake, you know, it really comes down to you already are in a situation where as a manager, I mean, very few managers have a long leash. I mean, it's something where if you get off to a slow start, you know, Bobby Cox can get off to a slow start, and at this point, it's not going to matter.
Right.
You know, I at this point, I guess you could say, you know, probably, I mean, Lou Pinella is a little safer than most managers in the situation he's coming into this year with the Cubs.
New ownership, too. But there's a handful of guys that have a long leash. And
Ron Washington's not in that group.
Right.
And
they got a lot shorter this spring.
Right. So basically what this means is that you're looking at a situation where the Rangers, if they get off to a slow start, and they're looking, saying, hey, what do we need to do to shake this up? Well, this is probably not going to help Ron Washington as far as, you know, hey, you know, no, stick with me.
It's a really strange organization for me because they've done so many things right as far as improving their big league club, improving their minor league talent, and yet they're broke. Yeah, they're going through this ownership change.
Well, they were broke. They're now
that sale hasn't gone through till what, August? And so there's some steps they're still
right.
going through. Obviously, the
it's
Greenberg
not fully
group.
Yet. It's not finalized
right.
yet by any means.
But I mean, they're obviously they've always been the Cowboys are always going to be king, but the Mavericks have been so good for so long under Mark Cuban, and the Rangers haven't been relevant for a decade really, outside of the 1 year with Buck Showalter where they won 80 some games. So I think that John Daniels has done some great things there, and they have a burgeoning organization.
There is really, you know, yeah, clearly.
But it could all fall apart if the ownership deal doesn't go well, and then you have this. I mean, you have your managers doing this. There's a lot of volatility in that situation, and the one thing about it is it strains credulity that a guy in his mid-50s is going to use for the first time.
Right.
And that's the only part of the story that really bothers me, and what that makes me think is that there's going to be continued journalistic investigations into whether or not he used before. And if it comes out that he did use before from a former teammate or some such, I mean, what does that do to the guy? I wonder about that. I think it's good the organization stood by him, but I don't think that situation's over.
I'll ask what that is do you think that being in the AL West is that, you know, does that make life easier or harder for the Rangers? Because it seems like it's a division where the Angels have been clearly the class of the division.
Right.
I don't think, you know, you could probably say the Angels may have taken a step back.
I don't think they had a great offseason.
But at the same time, it's hard to look at that division and say that, you know, you could map out a scenario of success for everyone in the division.
I still like the Angels to win that division. Ken Rosenthal at FoxSports.com had a great article the other day about why he thinks the Mariners are not going to be as good as everyone thought this year. Cliff Lee's oblique. He might start the year on the disabled list. I really think the thing is that when you have your general manager talking in spring training about, hey, you've got a four-hole hitter, that's a pretty big hole to have. And
that's not one you fill very easily.
And well, the thing is, they could have with Russ Branyan last year. They did fill it easily last year, but they're not going to be able to do that this year. They're looking at, like, Casey Koshman and Felipe Lopez as their 3-4 hitters with Milton Bradley in the 5-hole. I mean, that's ugly. That's not a championship.
When we talk about,
lineup.
The Braves lineup, I mean,
yeah.
Those guys would bat 6-7-8 in the Braves lineup.
That's right. So, and they're in the American League, so I don't care how good their defense is. They're going to have to score some runs, and it's not all going to happen. You know, Ichiro and Sean Figgins aren't going to steal their way all the way around the bases every time. So, I think the Seattle's. I agree with Ken Rosenthal's article that they're not going to be as good as everyone thought, even though they did have a very productive offseason. And then, you know, the Rangers, I think, had some real uncertainty. Until they do it, I'm a
right.
doubter
you
on,
can
the,
say,
on the Rangers.
You can be a doubter because of that. I will say.
And Oakland can't.
But as far as the Rangers, if you pick the team out there, you know, who should challenge them, you look at the Rangers and you say, no, I could map out a scenario here where they could be pretty good.
You can. I think that I do think that their chances are better than Seattle's, especially if Lee's not healthy. If Lee's healthy, then that changes things.
I mean, because
the pitching
and
defense part of that equation is going to be
outstanding.
You know
that at 2 out of every 5 days,
you're going to be very competitive.
You know, and it does not matter if you're getting 2 to 3 runs.
That's
you're
right.
Really competitive.
That's right. JJ, which of our last questions do you want to take as we wrap up the podcast? Justin Millar, who wants us to talk in depth about Mike Trout, or Ryan Lewis, is Thomas Neal real?
We talked about Trout a little bit.
Don't think Trout's a 30-30 guy like Justin Millar has. His power is way down the road. Don't be too deceived by Arizona League numbers.
Right, Arizona League is.
But we love the guy's speed, hitting ability, approach to the game.
And he's a tooled up guy.
He's a fast twitch athlete. So there's a lot to like about Mike Trout, but let's not get ahead of ourselves on the projected
right.
that
I mean,
kind
like,
of power.
Let's put it this way. He could put up numbers that seem to be half of what he did there, you know, if
yeah.
he goes to the Midwest League and. That could be a very good season.
Right, and scouts were comparing him to, like, a faster Aaron Rowan, but Aaron Rowan's not a 30 guy, not a 30 home run guy. So I think you're getting ahead of yourself on the power. But Thomas Neal is a power guy, back into the top 100 guy, snuck in there. One of the things, that was another guy that I was wondering when we got done with our top 100, wow, is Thomas Neal really a top 100 guy? Or am I ranking him that high? Because I think the Giants have a good farm system, and he's their number 4 prospect, and yada, yada,
and
yada.
And because, you know... It's always
he had a big Cal League year.
It's always
it's a Cal
tough.
League.
It's always tough when you have a Cal League guy. It's like okay, especially when you know you have a guy who's coming from a little bit. You know, I've got a question I think on a chat this offseason that said Thomas Neal, John Gaston. Why is it that you guys seem higher on Neal than Gaston when they both put up big numbers in the Cal League?
Right.
And I think the reason for that is that Neal has come less out of nowhere.
Right, he had a nice year
in the Sally League, and there's a little bit more tools maybe there than there is in Gaston's case.
The scouting report tells you he's more athletic, even though they're both left fielders. They're both going to be somewhat limited defensively. It sounds like Thomas Neal's a little bit better athlete than John Gaston, less of a stiff. There's less stiffness in his actions. But also, John Gaston played at Lancaster or the High Desert, whichever one it was. I guess it was Lancaster.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think you just throw those stats out the window. I mean, I can't even take them seriously. I mean, I really have to see what John Gaston does in Double A. So,
and
John Gaston, you know what? We do have a long track record on John Gaston. No offense to John Gaston. He has a long track record of mediocrity at the University of Arizona. He was just an okay player. And I know that's the Pac-10. The Pac-10's a good league and all, but he didn't really hit at Arizona. I mean, he's like a 300 hitter for 3 years in college and about 10 home runs and 15 home runs here or there and struck out a lot. And he did basically the same thing, but he got a lot of balls up into the jet stream in Lancaster. So it would be great for John Gaston to prove me wrong. I don't have a lot of faith in his future. I have a little bit more in Neal, just that he's done it 2 years in a row. It was a monster year in the Cal League, but it's a natural progression of what he did in the Sally League where he did show power. I think he has more legitimate power and legitimate hitting tools. But his best tool is the bat. But he is on our top 100, and Ben Revere was not. Part of me thinks maybe Ben Revere should have been on over Thomas Neal.
Talk about two very different guys.
They're probably both left fielders, though, is the thing. Although I think you could play center field with a 20-arm like Revere. Although the Twins are saying it's a 30-arm. Guys outside the organization say, it's 25 if it's not a 20. So
it's ugly. It's not good.
It's not Johnny Damon, but it's not much better.
But the thing just struck me, probably a good way to wrap it up. The cool thing about this is that we're recording this on March 6th today. 2 weeks from now, we start being able to say, hey, well, he's showing it in Double A.
That's right.
He's showing,
Well, a week from today, I think, is Tampa Bay comes to town. Tampa Bay Rays at Durham Bulls.
We're not far from the start of the season, which is, the best way to put it is the great thing about Baseball America is, we essentially get three Christmases spring.
That's right.
The start of the college season, we have the start of the Major League season, and we have the start of the Minor League season.
And don't forget the day the handbooks get here.
Yeah,
That's like Christmas, too.
So,
and this year, JJ, for the first time, you can – when a Baseball America staff member goes to a baseball game, you'll be able to basically read what our thoughts are basically at these games. All of us are going to be tweeting during the year. So you've been on Twitter for a while. What's your Twitter account?
My Twitter is JJCoop36, I think.
JJCoop36.
I got to get back into tweeting more. But
mine's just at John Manuel BA. So.
Yep.
Ben Babbitt's been on Twitter for a while. Will Lingo, Aaron Fitz,
Connor Glassy is the original VA Twitter.
Ben might have been.
Connor was the one who set up
Baseball America.
Yeah.
So you can follow Baseball America on Twitter. But soon, all of our thoughts, others of us are at games or watching game on TV or whatever. We'll be tweeting some of that as well, both on our own individual Twitter pages and at Baseball America's Twitter page. So. More ways to enjoy Baseball America during the 2010 season. So, and again, for next week's podcast, feel free to send those into us. You can check on the Facebook page or you can email us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We also want to remind you that when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game, introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right. Visit your nearest demo house today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. My voice ran out of air there at the end of that spot. For J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on Monday on the College Podcast here at baseballamerica.com. So long, everybody.